We're here with Dan Behrens, who's the SVP of Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. He's our thought leader this morning. Dan, good morning. Welcome back.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
I want to begin with something, because we're always trying to educate our listeners in these conversations. Tell us what speculative real estate development is.
Sure. Speculative real estate development, or spec development, as some people can call it, is the development of any kind of asset class without having a lease in place. So if it's an industrial building, developers will start construction prior to having a lease in place. A lot of people can think it's a little riskier. Obviously, there's not a tenant identified for that building. So it's among the more rare types of development, but one that's pretty popular. Even now, with in the development cycle we're in now, even office buildings are starting speculative development prior to signing leases up.
Well, it's very popular. I mean, I pulled one article that talked a little bit about this in the Chicago area, especially the end of 2019, the last part of 2019, there was quite a bit of this development speculation, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a couple of the office buildings downtown, particularly Fulton Market, have done a lot of spec development. It's worked out well, and industrial is the same thing. I mean, speculative development's not new. It's not a new phenomenon, but it's definitely something that is gained a lot more traction, a lot more popularity in this current development cycle.
The people that are involved in this, are they seeing something that we're not in some of these buildings and properties? Do they know something that we don't? Or how do we remain as investors, for example, and you as a bank, how do you know that these developments are going to pay out?
Well, it really goes back to the fundamentals of real estate, really just location. And you have to trust your developers that they're picking the right locations. They do this for a living. They know what locations are going to be successful and what may not be. They know the tenants. They know brokers who can bring tenants. And, you know, they feel that if the building goes up, you know, they think there's a high probability that, you know, if they can build it to their quality, the tenants will certainly lease.
You mentioned the Fulton Market. That's sort of a no-brainer for investors, that you see that and you see the development all around there. You know that that's going places. But are there places where it's not that cut and dry?
I mean, even in the Loop, it's not cut and dry. I mean, I think some of the new office developments, BMO Tower, for example, just south of Union Station, that didn't start out as speculative development. I mean, the building that's going up now, B of A's Tower on Wacker, that wasn't speculative. So, I mean, there are very few instances or few locations, particularly for office space, that you'll want to go speculative on. The buildings in Fulton Market aren't, you know, 600,000-800,000 square feet. A lot of them are smaller chunks of space that need to be leased. So you don't have the huge capital outlays, and you don't have the as much risk if you can't find a tenant. You're not servicing 600,000 square feet of, you know, office space that's empty.
Mm-hmm. There's another story that sort of ties into the local commercial real estate scene. And it involves the developers of some big projects like Vista Tower and Lincoln Yards, Bank of America Tower. They're putting their money in other developments in other cities. And the headline from the Tribune said some of them were saying, "We love Chicago, but are super nervous." How concerned should we be about this story?
I certainly think this is it's a big concern. Developers, I mean, in the normal life cycle of a developer, I mean, they're going to spread out. They're not just going to focus on one submarket. There's just too much risk associated with one market or submarket. They're going to extend their boundaries to spread the risk out geographically. That's not overly surprising. It's nothing new. But I think what investors and developers and myself as in a banking field, you're nervous about the climate that Chicago's portraying, I guess, to national investors and international investors. It's not a pro-development city right now, at least in my opinion. And a lot of people cite the uncertainty in real estate taxes, which you and I have talked about plenty of times in the past. Nobody likes uncertainty, and certainly not with real estate taxes. I mean, that's the largest expense line in any commercial real estate project or any budget. And if you don't know where your taxes are going to be in 1 year, 2 years, and 15 years down the road, a lot of developers and a lot of institutional invested capital isn't going to invest their money in Chicago. So they'll go to safer areas that have larger population increases. I think I heard recently that Chicago has had the fourth year in a row of a decreasing population. It's just not the right environment if you're a institutional investor to put money in right now.
But that said, the economy is firing on all cylinders right now. What does this say about the state of things if these developments can't happen in an economy like we're having now?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of these developers and developments have happened in what has been the longest development cycle, the positive development cycle in U.S. history. I mean, it's pretty unprecedented. And so it's not uncommon that, you know, these developers have experienced the success. I mean, I think the developments have been successful even in spite of the city or some headwinds that are facing some of the developers now. But where the business climate is in Chicago and Cook County, it's just not as favorable as other markets.
One of the areas that is seeing a lot of this development, where these people are moving their money and their developments to, again, the South, places like Austin and Atlanta and Dallas and Nashville. Also, the story mentions Denver, Los Angeles, and Miami. Is this a trend that could turn around if we see some changes in things like, for instance, taxes, like you talked about?
I think it certainly can turn around. I think the city's trying to do a better job of increasing population, at least downtown. I think that's got to filter out to the surrounding communities, into the neighborhoods. The city has to do a better job, and developers, frankly, have to do a better job of encouraging development in other areas that aren't just the CBD and the near-in central business district. So I think it certainly can turn around, and I think the city has to become a little more development friendly in order to do that.
There have been a couple of stories onto another topic about developers grumbling about affordable housing rules. We have in the news this week the stories about the Jackson Park area in Chicago where the presidential library wants to go, where they're fighting over affordable housing. And it seems like that's always the constant battle in communities where development comes into. Why do developers fight that so much?
Well, they fight it because of, like we talked about earlier with the taxes, uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think the mayor is developing a task force to increase the affordable housing in the city. Developers now have a little uncertainty as what they're going to face as they start development. If they want to buy a piece of land or an existing building that isn't zoned for commercial. So right now, the affordable ordinance requires that 10% of the units in a residential project be affordable, whether that's apartments or condominium units. The task force has developed these pilot zones in areas like Logan Square and Pilsen that are requiring 20%, but some aldermen are requiring up to 30%, or they're not going to approve the development for these deals. You know, we talked about how long this cycle has been going. It's been all positive for 10, 12 years now. But with that comes higher cost of labor, higher cost of materials, higher cost of land. So if when we couple that with the uncertainty in real estate taxes, I mean, developers, if they're taking 10 to 20% of their units and now making them affordable, thus decreasing their top line income, they're not going to be able to service the debt that's going to be associated with the project. I mean, it's a matter of time before the numbers just aren't feasible to develop. And I think some of the proponents of the ARO think, well, it hasn't stopped development yet, but again, we're 10 years into a dramatic increase in the development cycle.
It seems to me that as they wade further into looking at this affordable requirements ordinance, it's a delicate balancing act, isn't it? You could end up hurting more than helping.
Absolutely. I mean, if that's going to stifle development, what would be 10% or 20% affordable units will now not be built. It'll drive developers, like we just talked about, into other areas of the country, or even other areas of the city or suburbs, and really avoid areas where I think affordable housing is really a necessity.
Is there another solution that we're not seeing here?
I think, you know, a realistic, affordable requirement, I think, is somewhere between 10% and 30%. I think 30% just is unrealistic. Me as a lender, as soon as I see an apartment project or a condo project hit my desk, it's my first thing is to look at how many affordable units are going to be there. Because if the number is, or how many affordable units are required, if the number is even close to 20%, it's just not economically feasible. Mm-hmm. I think if the number stays in the 10 to 15% range, I think developers are smart enough and agile enough to really start squeezing every last dollar out of their buildings, and they'll be able to absorb that extra cost. But I think affordable housing is certainly needed in the city. It's just the amount of which is needed is needs to be figured out.
Dan, great conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Anytime, they can call me at 312-544-4657 or daniel.barons@associatedbank.com.
Thanks for coming in. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.